Welcome to the Master Your Mix podcast, helping engineers, producers, and artists create professional recordings and mixes, even from home. I'm your host, Mike Indovina. Let's get started. Welcome to the Master Your Mix podcast. My name is Mike Indovina, and thanks for hanging out with me today. Today, my guest on the episode is Johan Holmström. And if you're not familiar with him, he is a Swedish composer known for working in the video game music industry. And if you've ever played the game Candy Crush, you've definitely heard his music. He has worked on a bunch of tracks for all the various Candy Crush scores. He works at a company called King, which is one of the big game designers in that field there. But in today's episode, we dig into the process of making music for video games. And what goes into it? You know, like, what are the differences between just working on regular music versus stuff that is specifically built to be either in the background of a game or the foreground of a game, or to have dialogue and sound effects and all that kind of stuff? You know, what are those differences? So we get into all of that. We talk about making sound effects and some of the considerations you need to have to design sound effects that go along with the music in a game. We also talk about how to make sure that your music translates across multiple devices. And so whether you're in the music industry or you're in the video game industry, this is still important, right? People are going to be listening to music on phones, and we need to make sure that our music translates outside of our studios to whatever devices or whatever listening playback systems people are listening to. So yeah, it's definitely a relevant topic in the gaming industry too. So we get into all of that. Plus, we talk about getting into the industry and what it takes to get in as a sound designer or as a composer. We cover a lot of ground in this episode. So with that said, let's just jump right into it. Johan Holmström, thank you so much for being on the Master Your Mix podcast. How are you doing today, man?
All good, all good. A bit awesome. Tired. I've been watching a screen all day, as you know, a lot of us do, right?
Yeah, that is one of the it's one of the downsides. It's like often we're in like these closed rooms and we just stare at screens all day, right? And you got to wear your like blue blocker glasses or something like that to save your eyes a little bit, you know? Yeah. But for people who might not be familiar with you, can you give us your background in terms of who you are, what you do, and ultimately how you got into everything that you're up to today?
Yeah. So while the relevant background is, I've started out as a musician. I went to Musicians Institute in Los Angeles, 92, 93, during the LA riots. That was exciting times. And then I went to Berkeley in Boston, 95. And then I went back home. We got a record deal with the band. We toured. The band split up, and I started touring with other artists. Then after a while, I got fed up with that and decided to, you know, I thought, what do I appreciate? What do I like to do? Well, I like to work in a, you know, in a studio environment. And this is about 20 years ago, and accidentally, it was when Messenger on Facebook was new. I don't know if it was called Messenger back then, but you know, when that whole thing started and you started reaching out to old friends and people you haven't talked to since, you know, way, way, way back. So I had this idea in my head that, oh, perhaps I should try to, you know, find gigs as a gaming composer and sound designer. And 2-3 days after I just had that initial thought, a friend reached out on Facebook, hey, how are you doing, blah blah blah, and we used to share rehearsal space. He had another band, but so he knew, you know, my background as a musician, and he asked, are you interested in doing music for a game? You can't believe it, I just thought of this, blah blah blah. So that was a bit of luck and a bit of, you know, everything. So that's basically what I do now. I compose for games and do sound design as well for games. I've done lots of stuff outside of that area too, but that's the biggest thing. I don't know. I know I'm not famous at all or anything, but if I would be famous, it would be for composing three soundtracks for Candy Crush. Those are like the biggest released things, I'd say. And that sort of made me a name in the gaming industry, at least.
Very cool. There's a lot to cover in that. Like, let's just maybe start from the beginning then. Like, as far as like getting into the audio production side of things, like it sounded like you were focusing on your band and that kind of stuff. Was the original idea just to like record your band? Is that what got you into like production to begin with? Or
I was always very curious about the actual recording process. I used to have there was this play called the Jazz Institute. I used to hang out at when I was younger. They had a studio there, you know, with a real tape and everything. And I was like, really, well, actually, before that, when I was 14, 15, I started working with a, what do you call them? Porta Studios, the four track, you know what I mean, right?
Yep, the tape recorders, yeah.
Yeah. And so we had that in our Fritidsgård. I don't know what you call that in English, but it's a place you can, kids can hang out after school. A couple of hours, they can play ping pong or watch movies or whatever. A place kids could hang out. And we had our rehearsal space under that's the same roof. And they ended up getting one of these Ascom something four track thing. And the manager was nice enough to let me get a key in the weekend so I could go up and, you know, work in that little studio with a four track. So I started with a four track. And then later on, the Jazz Institute, they had a real tape-to-tape machine and a real mixing board and all that. So I've done some real recordings. I wouldn't say I'm great, but I have a basic knowledge because of that background.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And so then as far as like when you finally decided, okay, that I'm going to just take a shot at this and get into gaming, like what was it about the gaming industry that drew you to that? Like, were you a gamer yourself?
I was very much a gamer when so I'm 50, I'm turning 52 this year. I can't, it's weird, but yeah. So Commodore 64, when that was a thing, I was, you know, into that a lot. But after that, I wouldn't, you know, call myself a gamer. I'd say my reasons were because I thought I could make money working in a studio environment, being creative. And that was what I wanted, you know, to find a way to do that. And then I just thought gaming feels like, you know, they're making lots of money every year. Feels like it goes up and up. So, and so I started reaching out after I did the first gig with my old friend there on Facebook. I just started emailing a lot of companies around the world. And then I got another gig and I got a third gig. Yeah. So, and I started building a portfolio. And after a couple of years, I started freelancing for King. Ending up they hired me, and I was there full time for 8 years as a senior composer and sound designer. And while I was there, that was when Candy Crush exploded. So that was, you know, it's obviously been a good thing for me and everyone else involved. but to answer the question, I just wanted to work in a studio environment, and I thought gaming felt it could be something. And actually, well, I got a background as a, well, you see the keyboards here. So my main instrument is the piano or keyboards and stuff like that. Keyboards. So, and I think with that background, having, you know, since I was 13 or something, I'm used to, you know, tweak sounds and stuff. I was kind of early doing that. So, the studio thing and tweaking thing, well, and a bit of, you know, it's quite, like we said, a bit solitaire. But it's nice sometimes to just shut the door and do your thing and just enjoy that. So I guess a lot of different things made me choose this path. But the main thing is that I wanted to find something to do in a studio environment.
That's cool. And I love it. I think that you chose an interesting avenue to go into that is kind of, you know, most people just think they, to be in a studio, you have to be recording artists, you know, but the gaming industry is such a massive industry that has fewer people fighting for those same jobs, you know, working on the audio side of things. So, I mean, maybe things have changed quite a bit lately, but I definitely feel like, you know, back when you were starting, it would have been a much smaller group of people for those positions, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. Lots of stuff has been happening in the, well, last 10 years or so. If you look at, you know, job ads, 10 years ago, they would say, oh, we need a sound designer. Now, for bigger games, we need a vehicle specialist or weapon specialist, or, you know, it's more niched.
Interesting.
And, more jobs, I'd say, especially a sound designer. If you're a sound designer, it's easier than if you're just a composer.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. So for people who aren't maybe familiar with like what a sound designer's job is, can you give us a little brief description of what that entails?
Well, yeah. From my experience in the gaming industry, I've mainly worked on casual games, meaning mobile, smaller games. I've done some AAA stuff, but only music. I've only composed music for AAA games. But I know my experience is this. If you want to, you know, if you work in a casual environment, smaller games, it takes about, you know, 4, 6, 8 months or so to produce a game. It can vary a bit, but like a rough figure compared to a AAA game, which is like a couple of years to produce a thing. That said, if you work with sound design on casual games, the normal procedure is you do both sound design and music. That's pretty normal if you work with casual games.
Gotcha.
And the sound design, it's, of course, normally less sounds than a AAA game. In a AAA game, you have the whole audio engine, the like programs like Wise or FMod, where you put the music and the sound design, and you can put it in a 3D environment, having it, you know, panning left, right, depending on where you are, et cetera, et cetera. In casual games, you don't really do that stuff.
Gotcha.
So I'd say it's, if you're an aspiring sound designer / composer, I'd say casual games is a good place to start. Because, you know, you learn a little bit of everything. Music, sound design. But if you want to really get your hands dirty and dig into sound design, I think it's more fun to do, to work on a AAA game.
For sure. So it sounds like, you know, obviously the AAA games, they sound like they're much more intense and more laborious to get into. Now, when you were just getting started with this, did you just think like, oh, I'm just going to compose music and that's all it is, and just, you know, like any other project? Or was there more to it than that? Like, did you have to learn different specs for how to deliver files, or like what was that process like?
I was super naive. I had no clue. I just, you know, threw myself out there, and I thought I could, you know, manage anything they throw at me. So I've learned along the way, but it's not, yeah, I mean, it's normally WAV files for, you know, if they want the high-res stuff, and OGG files normally if you work in Unity in mobile games, and it's not a big thing. And normally you can deliver, if I mean, Unreal or Unity, the biggest game engines, they can convert the audio in those programs as well. So you can just send the high-res material to anyone, you know, working with that in the team, and they'll just convert it if they want to. I like to do that myself, though, because I can choose the parameters and, you know. It wasn't a big thing. I think the biggest thing for me was when I did the, because I find it really easy to write. I mean, basically any type of music. I think it's super easy. And but when I got the first Candy Crush soundtrack that I did, and it all of a sudden turned out London Symphony Orchestra would record it at Abbey Road. That was a different monster. I mean, it was, because I don't have any... I've studied music, but more like as a musician. I took courses like that, not, you know, composing or anything. So I'm self-taught in that aspect. But it turned out good, because I... you can learn so much from the sample libraries. And I mean, it's, if you just compose it and it sounds good in the computer, you're almost there. It should be okay. But what I did was I handed it out. I handed over the stuff to a friend of mine who I bought in to conduct when we recorded. So I felt it would be good if that guy had heard the music before, because sometimes composers just get the sheet and then just, oh. And in my, I think that's weird, because I feel it has to be better if they have some sort of, you know, contact with the material prior to the recordings. But anyway, so he also, I mean, he took a look at everything. I just said, is it anything that's weird? Just let me know. And so I had this safety net with that guy helping me prepare what I did in the computer and turning it out to real actual notes, sheet music for the symphony orchestra.
That's very cool. And that's going to be a massive accomplishment to reach, to like have the symphony orchestra recording yourself at Abbey Road. Like, you know, who gets that to say they did that, right?
That was like, fantastic experience. I remember, I mean, that was like, this. It was a big thing for me.
That's cool. And so then, like, maybe I'm a little curious to maybe go back to like kind of what it typically looks like for you at the start of a project. Like when a new game comes to you, what's the typical process there? Like, what are you working off of? Do you have any sort of visuals or like what kind of, how does that process start for you?
Well, sometimes you get just like a PDF saying we're doing a game and this is, here's the backstory, blah, 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 blah. And sometimes you get images, or sometimes even they've started working on the game, so you can get a build. You can try it out on your iPad, on your phone, or whatever. But I always try to find, ask the right questions. Like, I see each project as its own universe. So I want to know how it, you know, smells and feels and sounds in that universe. I want to, you know, create that thing in my mind. And I do that by asking a lot of questions to the producers. I used to be, when I was younger, when I started out, I thought, sometimes you feel stupid asking questions, but now I think it's all, the more you ask, the better, because it shows you're sincere. It shows you actually know what you're doing. And I've noticed during the years that a lot of, you know, producers, game producers and so on, they like audio and they like music, but they have no clue really how to express themselves in a musical language. And so I try to make that dialogue simpler. I try to simplify it for them. I try to find easy things like, give me like three links on YouTube, what you think the music, you feel it should sound like. And I listen and I ask questions about, okay, so you sent this, do you mean the whole fantasy aspect of that thing, or do you mean the same instruments they use, or do you mean if it's in minor or major? I try to pinpoint making my, when I start, you know, I should know as much as possible about the whole process and the whole universe, basically. So, and I normally start with the music just to set the mood, and I'll send it to the team, and sometimes I nail it on the first, or sometimes you have to send like 2-3 more times before they're, oh yeah, now we're, you know, getting somewhere. And then I'll continue working on that piece, because I don't send the finished product, and I finalize that. And because if it's more than one piece of music, doesn't matter, because with the first piece I do, I know, I set the mood, I set the orchestration or instrumentation or whatever for that specific project. And with that in, when I have that in the back of my head, it's easier to get going with the sound effects, because then I know which key we're in. If I want to make, you know, sound effects are supposed to tell the players that they've done something good, you can ring, you know, got to be in the same key, of course. And I can choose to write instruments to go with the music if I make melodic sound effects. And so I start with the music, and then I get going with the sound effects, so I can always consider how it works together with the music.
Yeah. It's interesting because when you had originally said that like writing songs comes super easy to you, in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm jealous of that. Like I struggle with that. Like, you know, but hearing the way that you break down that process and you ask all those questions to come up with like the parameters that you're writing within, I think that that would make it substantially easier because now you have like the box that you're working within and you know what kind of you know what direction to go into because you've been led that direction and you have those answers that guide your decisions. So I think that that's actually a really interesting approach. And it makes a lot of sense to me that like you would get as much detail as possible to make sure that you nail it right away, as opposed to just leaving everything super vague and hoping for the best and spending a bunch of time. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always like, it's very quite common if there's a team that produces the game. So I found it quite hard in the beginning when I sent the music like the first times, it's still like this, but everyone has to have their say, which is sometimes, and I still think kind of problematic. I'd like to have one producer that's in charge and, you know, says, and we've had our, you know, communication. I know what he said to me or she, what kind of music they want. But sometimes it has happened. I've got, you know, I was told to do this sort of music, rock and roll or something. And then some other guy in the team says, oh, I think we should have a waltz. He wasn't there when we started the whole dialogue, you know. So, and that can be a bit, you know, but I try. That's also one of the things when I ask, so who's in charge? It's good if we have this, you know, communication. I want everyone to be happy, of course, but please have like a internal talk before you decide. And then once, you know, you tell me what to do, you should have decided among yourselves first.
That makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like, I mean, to some degree, it's almost like being in a band where you've got all these different people putting in input, but like there's the one songwriter who's like, you know, got their idea of what they wanted to sound like, and then other people have this other vision, that kind of thing, right? So it definitely makes sense that like you want everyone to be on the same page, and you just got to find that way to figure out who's in charge here, who's ultimately got the decisions, the decision making process, right? So that's really interesting. So then, when it comes to starting a game, like, do you typically have any idea of like how many songs you need to do, or are you writing full songs, or are you writing just like little cues? Like, what does that part look like for you?
Since I started 20 years ago, it was perhaps 20-second snippets. The loops, they were terrible, and also they used MP3s, which, as you might know, adds, you know, some air in the beginning and the end when it converted to MP3, so it doesn't loop well. That was terrible. So, but after, I think the first Candy Crush game that I didn't do the music on that, but I think it had like 20-second loops. And when I did the music for the second Candy Crush Soda, I told them, I mean, people are going to play this for a long time, so it would be good if the music would be at least like 4 or 5 minutes. And back then, I think if you were to download an app, that was bigger than, I don't know, 60 megabytes or something. It had to be on Wi-Fi because that was a big thing. And they wanted to, no, we can't. The game has to be under that because then we don't have people download, you know, the games. And but now it's easier. But I remember when we recorded the thing with London Symphony Orchestra at Road, I think that track is 3 minutes or so. But I remember this terrible, terrible experience when one of the, you know, programmers, and they were trying, you know, cutting megabytes here and there. And they said, can't we have the music in mono? Can't have the music. Can I say fuck? Sorry.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. You can't have the, that's crazy. We went to Abbey Road. We had, you can't put that in mono. So, and he sort of, explain it that way, but it's weird. But nowadays it's easier. And having that said, casual games, you know, there's always one song for the, when you're in the menu, that's sort of the main theme. And then the in-game music is normally 3-4, you know, depending on how you want to work it, because sometimes you do. I've done all tons of stuff. You can have long loops, and you can have we've done like loops that loop A, B, C, D, E, and they should be able to mix randomly with a little bit of silence in between, and just anyone should be able to play after the other. That's kind of fun. And I've worked with layering stuff as well. You have like a basic thing, like perhaps strings or something, and when it gets a bit more exciting, you have a second channel in the background with percussion, you know, fading up and stuff like that. But sorry if I talked much, but I think, yeah, to answer your question, yes, you know how many songs there should be.
Yeah, that's cool. It's fascinating because, like, I guess it would really depend on the scope of the game and how many levels there are, that kind of thing. Because obviously, if someone's playing a really long game, hearing the same five songs or whatever might end up getting annoying after a while, right? So, like, definitely the scope of the game, I imagine, would determine how many tracks you're trying to compose and picturing how much time people are actually spending listening to those songs, too.
I'm doing a super cool game right now working on. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but it's very heavily 80s stuff, like 80s synth pop-ish sort of thing. And I'm doing tons of 30-second loops, all 80s, super 80s. And it's very, very fun. And what I've noticed is you don't really want to do too much melodies when you have those short snippets, like 30 seconds, because then you're going to throw up, or the player's going to throw up when they hear that same melody. Da, 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 da. It's more like a groove thing. You find that 80s groove. I've done, I don't know, 20, 30 variations, and they sort of play randomly depending on how hard the levels get. But I'd say they're like maybe 8 different versions for each level, the harder you get. And so I hope will feel like, wow, a lot of music in this game.
That's really interesting that you bring up that idea of not having the melodies, because I think that does make a lot of sense. And I imagine that there's some games where the music is supposed to play a big role and, like, you know, immerse people into it even further. And then there's other ones where it's just the background, right?
Super important. Forgot to see. Yeah, that's very, like, when I told you I talk and I ask a lot of questions to the producer, that's one of the main things. Do you want the music in your face, or do you want it just to sit back? That's super important. So good you brought it up, because you don't, sometimes it just, there just has to be something in the background happening, or sometimes.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Now, this may be something that applies more to the AAA games that you were talking about, but, you know, there's a lot of games where, depending on what the user does, the music changes or the sound effects, like, you know, there's different actions that or sound effects that go along with their actions.
Yeah.
How do you plan for that as a writer?
Well, yeah, that's why the AAA stuff is more, you know, it's a way bigger thing. Sometimes I have friends that work a lot. Well, they're hired full time working as game composers for AAA games. And me having mostly a background in casual gaming, in 1 year, perhaps I do like 20, I'm just making things up. Let's say 20 in a year, I do way more than 20, but like in a month or two, I do 20 songs or something different, totally different styles, totally different, you know. But those guys working on AAA, they really, really dig down and work with the same soundtrack for years sometimes. So, but there's, and, normally, I think it's a tighter dialogue or planning with the whole gaming experience. I mean, again, if you're playing Candy Crush on your mobile phone, nothing. Well, you click and things happen. As you know, compared to a 3D world somewhere, you know, you can move anywhere you like, and if you go in closer to the waterfall, you should hear that. And so, it's way, way, way more. Way more stuff to think about and consider. But and the cool thing is, I mean, I recently finished playing Red Dead Redemption 2 with my son, and I was sort of blown away, because that was it's so well produced. It's such a fantastic audio thing there. It's amazing. And but I don't know if I moved away from your question, but music wise, working with the game engines that can handle cool stuff like that, you really got to think everything through and just make sure it, you know, has smooth crossfades or whatever into the next piece of music or the next layer, doubling up more layers on top of the first. But I'm not the expert there. I'm not really into those audio engines that much.
Fair.
Scratch the surface, basically.
For sure. But even on those more casual games, it sounds like you're still at least considering, yeah, those crossfades between different songs and making sure that everything works well together. So I'm assuming that when you're writing, are you just kind of writing in similar keys, or just is it the instrumentation that often makes it easier to do those transitions? Or are you literally like experimenting? And if what happens if I move the song over here? Like, are you trying to do that kind of stuff too?
Like with the key, it's unfortunately, I think it's kind of boring because you better stay in the same key if you don't want to, you know, because this happy sound effect, ding, if it's like the melodic sound effects, it's too bad if you have some sort of modulation just because you feel like it or you're bored. Oh, I can't be in the same key all the time. But in the end, that's the best thing for casual games. If you can't do anything to make the sound effects follow what happens, you know, and if you change key and you can't affect that, then you're in sort of big trouble because it sounds really bad sometimes if you don't consider the key.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So then as far as like the mix of these songs or these cues that you're making, how does that get affected by things like sound effects or if there's any sort of dialogue or anything like that that could be part of the game? Like, how does that get considered in the mixing process? And are you making various mixes for different scenarios, or what does that look like?
Well, basically, as right now I'm freelancing and I just normally just send the stuff away. Sometimes I just normalize all the sound effects and say good luck, you know, mix it. Sometimes they ask me to send it and make me, you know, level it, mix it a bit, compare. I mean, I can adjust it accordingly to the music. And that's, you know, pretty simple. It's just like mixing. So I just put on the music and I play each and every one of the sound effects separately and put everything in a nice level and save it as it is and then send that whole batch, everything.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. And I, maybe a kind of follow up to that question then was that you had mentioned that a lot of the times you're working on games that are built for mobile. And, you know, a lot of times those mobile devices don't have necessarily like full frequency response and that kind of stuff. So does that impact your decisions at all when you're composing stuff or when it's being mixed?
In an ideal world, everyone has like headphones or something when they play the games. I like to think so. But I do mix. I have programs so I can hear how it sounds like in, you know, when I mix in my studio. And I also try the builds on my iPad or something. So I actually try it on the phone or something and listen to, because normally, well, it gets way more harsh. You got to cut a lot of up on a lot of things because it can get really harsh on those small speakers from what I've experienced. But I always try to, I want the music to sound as good as possible. Perhaps I'm avoiding like super low stuff if I know it's just mobile, but I still try to make a mix as, you know, as I'm supposed to release it on a record or something.
Yeah, it makes sense. I assume like, you know, the technology these days is getting better and better. And you're right. Like people are starting to listen to things on their headphones. And so that it kind of makes sense that you'd have to account for the people that are going to listen to it on the ideal system. And then, you know, if it gets reduced down for someone else's crappy system, whatever, but, But yeah, that makes sense to me then. But it is great to hear you talking about, you know, actually checking it out on your iPad or your iPhone. I think that's really important. You know, it's like, you know, when people are mixing music, just music for anything, like, you know, it's like you always have to be factoring in the translation factor and, you know, what it's going to sound like outside of your studio. So the more you know your speakers, the more you know the playback systems people might be listening to, the better you can mix and determine what moves you need to make to get it to translate well, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Man, this has been really interesting. Like, I find the process of making these games really fascinating. Now, one thing, like, I know I've had a lot of students that have reached out to me, like, saying, hey, like, I want to get into the gaming industry or, you know, doing sync or whatever. What's your advice there for someone who wants to get into this industry? Like, what's the best way for them to get their foot in the door or to at least prepare to, you know, apply for something and actually have a realistic shot of getting chosen?
Yeah, I'd say make a good portfolio. They can, I mean, steal trailers on YouTube. I mean, they can rip a trailer, create their own music and sound design to that trailer, perhaps 2-3 different sort of games, one action, one fantasy, one something else, just to show, you know, the width of what they can produce musically. And be totally honest and say, hey, sorry, this is not my material, but I did the music just to show you guys, and just try to reach out to as many, you know, gaming companies as possible. There are more positions now than there were a couple of years ago, and I think that will, you know, keep growing a bit at least. But and like I said, it's easier to get a job as a sound designer than a composer, but it's possible.
Yeah. So then, as far as like someone looking to create that portfolio, you'd mentioned maybe having a couple different genres of games. Do you have any other tips there for making a portfolio stand out?
Well, with the thing that you do, you gotta have a great mix, a great sounding mix. It has to sound really, really good if you want to stand out. That's the only way. You can't, you know, send some crap, then they won't call you. So I'd say learn how to mix at least somewhat good. The last AAA game I worked on, and I can mix. I can do okay mixes, but I wouldn't say I'm great, but I'm good, you know. But the last AAA game I did, I handed it everything over to a mixer, and he mixed and mastered everything.
Kind of makes sense. If you got the budget there and there's someone who can do it better than you, you would do it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure, much like when you did your stuff with the orchestra, like, you know, you had programmed it all. I'm sure it sounded great on your computer, but to get it to sound even bigger and better, if you can afford to have the orchestra come play at Abbey Road, you know, why wouldn't you, right?
Absolutely. So just make sure it sounds as good as possible and take your time. I mean, a lot of working with music in the computer is tweaking, and, you know, listen. Just take another day, listen with fresh ears. Oh, and you'll find, you know, some annoying frequency or something. So take your time, make sure it's the best stuff you can possibly create and that you're hopefully proud of, and just use that, reach out. You can always check, I don't know the names, but I know there are communities where job adverts for, you know, they look for people around the world, you know. If you're lucky, you can just, well, apply, try at least. And
for sure. Yeah. You talked about the idea of, like, you know, making sure that you're leading with your best foot forward, obviously, and like doing your best work. Now, that's one thing a lot of people struggle with, is like knowing when they're done with something or when it is their best work. And a lot of people have that perfectionism thought where, like, it can always be better. So they just keep working on it and they never actually finish any projects. So I'm curious to know how that works for you, like when you're composing stuff or when you're doing a mix for your own stuff. Like, how do you determine when something is done?
So that's a good question. I've got it before somewhere, and I remember what I answered, and I feel sort of blessed because I've talked to a lot of people who, like you said, I don't know, oh, I just got to add this. Oh, I just got to, oh, just this thing, you know. But the way I work, I hear it in my head before I do it. And once it sounds like it's supposed to, according to my head, I know I'm done. So, and so I for me, thank you, Jesus, or whoever, that's, I'm lucky, because I know this could be a big thing for, I know it is a big thing. People never satisfy, never satisfied. They can go on for, you know, ever, oh, I just got to change. Oh, I got to. But I hear it in my head, and as when it sounds like the things in my head, I'm happy.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, that's, that, I agree with you. I think that that is the answer most of the time. It's like you need to have that vision for what you're trying to accomplish before you even start, so that when you actually hit that, you're there. And I imagine too that, you know, you have this vision that is often based on the parameters that we talked about earlier by all the questions you were asking. So, you know, it's kind of like if it checks off all of those boxes, then, you know, what else is there to do really, right?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it makes sense. Johan, this has been awesome. Like, it's been really interesting to learn more about your process, and it's a really fascinating world. And I know that a bunch of the people listening to this are probably thinking, like, you know, this could be an interesting career path. And, you know, some people don't want to be the rock stars there, you know, or don't want to be like the studio engineer necessarily, but there's a lot of people that are great composers. And I think the gaming industry is a really cool world for that. And so it's been cool to get your perspective on how to get in and what kind of stuff to be working on. If people want to learn more about you and maybe follow your work online, or maybe even potentially hire you to work on their stuff, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I should have had a website up and running. I will pretty soon. And it will be tinyillusions.net. Tinyillusions.net. So I'd say, I don't know when this is going to air, but within 3 weeks, it should be up and running. And there will, you know, there's my email and everything. I'm on LinkedIn, Johan Holmström. You can reach out there, Facebook, whatever.
Perfect.
And I'm always happy when people reach out.
Awesome. Well, I'll definitely include, if you get me the link, I'll include that in the show notes so that I can put that out there. And by the time the episode airs, it sounds like you should have your website already up and running. So that'll be great.
Great.
Right on. Well, thank you again for taking the time to do this. It's been really great. And I can't wait for people to dig into this and start making some gaming music.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Right on. So that was my interview with Johan Holmström, and I thought that was really fascinating. I love learning more about how music gets made or how it gets used in different areas of the industry. And the gaming world is just a really fascinating area where, you know, I think that it's growing. There's a lot of money being thrown around in that industry right now. So it might actually be a really cool avenue for people listening to this. If you're not sure of, like, you know, what can I do with my audio skills? The gaming industry could be a really cool avenue to explore. But yeah, it was definitely really interesting to learn more about Johan's approach to his games and what kind of considerations go into making music for this. I like that he talked about things like, you know, making sure that your sound effects are in the same key as your music and all that kind of stuff. Some of that might seem pretty obvious to some people, but to others, maybe not. And I think it's a really important thing to understand. Like, if you're trying to create this experience for people, you need to make sure that every element of the music and how the sound effects blend and how all that other stuff comes together, it has to be seamless. You can't have something that distracts you or pulls you out of the game, because if that happens, then you've failed. So you need to make something that just absorbs you and keeps you invested in the game. And that's, you know, that's ultimately how a lot of these games make money, right? They keep people locked into the game and not distracted. They don't annoy them, all that kind of stuff. So music plays a big role in making sure that these games are successful at doing that. So it was great to get to chat with Johan, who is someone who has worked on massive games. Like, Candy Crush is an insanely popular game. I actually have a really fun story about that. Years ago, my wife and I, we went to this music festival in Canada called Rockfest. And we were with a good buddy of mine whose band was playing the show. And so we were all hanging out backstage, and we just happened to walk by a bunch of the green rooms. And there was one green room in particular where, when you looked inside, it was a bunch of metalheads all playing Candy Crush on their iPads. That band was Cannibal Corpse. And it was amazing because, you know, it was just like such a juxtaposition to see, like, these like heavy metal dudes playing Candy Crush on their iPads. And later on in the day, we were like walking through the grounds and my wife could hear like some intense grunting and screaming coming. And she's like, what band is that? It's like, oh, it's the Candy Crush guys. So yeah, Candy Crush is a massive game. And Johan has played a big part in making that game so successful and catchy to a lot of people, including Cannibal Corpse. So, yeah, I hope that you enjoyed that episode. I hope that you found it really fascinating and learned a lot from it, too. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast. That way you're notified about all new episodes as they go live each and every Wednesday morning. And if you're working on your music right now and you're feeling stuck with it and you're not quite sure what you can do to take it to that next level, you know, like Johan talked about in this interview, you want to have a portfolio that showcases your best work so that whether you're trying to get gigs for yourself or you're trying to attract other artists to come record with you in a studio, or if you're trying to get sync licensing gigs or work in the video game industry, you need to have music that shows your talent in the best way possible. So if you're feeling like you're stuck and you're not sure of what to do to elevate the quality of your music, that is exactly what I'd love to help you out with. And inside of my coaching program, Amplitude, I work one-on-one with my students to help make sure that they're getting the best results with their music. And inside of that program, we work with you listening to your mixes and providing you with actionable feedback personally tailored to your specific mixes. So we go back and forth on your tracks until your mixes are finally at the level that you expect them to be. And we give you everything step by step so that you know exactly what to do, what order to do things, so that it eliminates a lot of the overwhelm and frustration, and instead you can get results quickly. So if you're interested in learning more about this program and you want one-on-one help, make sure to visit masteryourmix.com/amplitude, and you can find all the details there. And I'd love to hop on a call with you to learn more about your goals with music and what struggles you're facing right now to see if I can truly help you. And if it seems like we can help you inside of this program, then I'd love to give you all the details about how to join and give you a free demo of how everything works inside of the program. So once again, make sure to visit masteryourmix.com/amplitude to get all the details for that. And with that said, we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you so much for sticking around, and I can't wait to chat with you in the next one. We'll talk soon. Have a good one. Thanks for listening to the Master Your Mix podcast. To have your questions answered, submit your questions to questions@masteryourmix.com. Please go to iTunes and subscribe and leave a review. And for more information on how you can improve your mixes, visit masteryourmix.com.